it's our... It's
game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
Welcome back to the Gamers Haven podcast. We are your hosts, Ethan, Jeremy, Nathan, or Ethan, Nathan, Jeremy, or Nathan, Ethan, Jeremy, or however really you want to go about
saying
it.
Do it alphabetically. Jeremy, Nathan.
Ethan, Jeremy, Nathan. Yeah, so there we go. There we go. It really kind of has to roll off the tongue. We are, of course, recording again, and we have a live studio audience currently again.
Of two people,
yes. Hopefully that will grow. Maybe I should actually send out a tweet saying, hey, we're broadcasting live now, you know.
Now we're broadcasting live in a theater near you. Only $7.50 to get in.
All right.
Oh, wait, no, that's actually cheaper than normal price for a ticket, isn't it? Only $11.50 to get in.
No, we could charge $7.50.
There is that, yes.
Okay. We could charge $7.50, but the theater has to charge a little bit.
What are we talking about today? I think we're going to be beating the CantCon horse some more tonight, aren't we?
Hey, there's nothing wrong with beating the horse that is CantCon. I'd say it went really freaking good this year, except for the people that complained.
Oh, well, we only had two people that I know of that really complained. So,
well, I had people complain to me that wouldn't actually write anything down, and I'm not going to bother talking about them.
Yeah, because they didn't give to me.
By the end of the con, I was like, shut up, leave me alone. If you're not happy, go write it down on the frickin' form. Because it was the same thing every time. I got tired of hearing about it. I'm like, that...
Next time.
Not enough space. Like, yeah.
No, that wasn't what I got bitched at about. No one wanted to go talk to my wife about the ticket thing for the raffle, and so I got bitched at because they could bitch to a guy, but they didn't want to bitch to a woman. And so by the time I was done, I was like, I don't care. We'll change it next year. Just leave me the hell alone. And half the people, I didn't even know these people. I'm like, why the hell are you bothering me?
I have no idea. But anyway, yes, we're talking about going to be talking a little bit about CantCon. I think it's going to be more a sort of our perspectives on it and what we think worked
on
well.
On the games and
I think
games
it went smashing.
Sort of thing.
I think the games
so,
went
that's swimming. What we're going to talk about today. We might also drop in a mention here about a few things here and there, Gen Con, because probably the next episode we're going to be recording is going to be probably Gen Con heavy because I'll be getting back from that. So.
Yes, Ethan's going to Gen Con, the bastard.
Yep, I am a bastard.
And you too, Rolling 20s. Yeah, but Gen Con's awesome, but
Bing.
I like our con better. Why? Because I can make it to it without having any problems.
Well, there is that. But
well, I can't hate Salen. She's cool.
Well, that's good. I don't hate Salen. I like Salen. I like her a lot, but hey, obviously I like her a lot. Anyway.
Well, you're prejudiced.
I am prejudiced. But we will be back right after this.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. Huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com. Or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
This is the Vorpal Network.
And we are back, and as we said in the intro today, now that we're a bit less distracted, we are going to be talking a bit more about CantCon, some of our perspectives on the whole thing, what we thought worked, what we thought didn't work. So let's go ahead and go with from some first impressions. Nathan, what was your what did you take away from CantCon this year?
Well, I think everything went really well. Again, I know I said this earlier. Fortunately, we lost the recording. I learned that I cannot run 7 games out of 9 sessions because I lose my voice and it takes me almost a month to get it back. There were a couple things that did not run as well as we'd like to hope, but I don't wish to really talk about them in depth. I already talked about them in depth in the retrospective. They'll work better next year, I'm hoping. One of the things I would like to see that I think will work better is if we can, if it works out with JCCC and some restaurants, it'd be like something like getting some restaurants in there to sell food right. at the break times, and make them a little bit of money, and help people, you know, be able to get to ready for their events on time sure. and be there on site when the tickets.
Yeah, there's definitely place. Some scheduling stuff that I need to work on, some logistics stuff. I think overall, my impression I took from the con was that it went very well. I think good 95% of the people that went there had a great time, and the 5% that didn't have a great time either understand that, you know, we're growing and have their own reasons for it, and then there's maybe a small percentage of that I just don't want to come back, so I don't really care. But I know that's a horrible thing to say, but quite honestly, with the turnout we had, I think we did a great.
Yeah.
We pulled off a good show. So,
one thing that shocked me was some person complained that we charged too much for the day, and I was like, "Wow, really? Mm-hmm. We have more games running than any other con that I've run into in this area right now, and we're charging like half as much for a day pass as they do."
Yeah,
gotta make our money back.
Yeah, and if you think, well, we have to cover the cost of the
it's a non-profit.
For our listeners who don't know, basically, if you pre-registered, a 3-day attendance was $25, or it was $10 a day if you were just buying daily. At the door, that went up to $12 a day or $30 for the weekend pass. And at that point, I think the pricing and generally the feedback I got on it was that it was right on, that everyone thought it was great. So.
I saw a couple people who wrote on their evaluation forms that they didn't like the price. And I look at it and I go, I'd say our price was more than fair.
Mm-hmm.
3 days for $25 or 3 days for $30 if you registered at the door.
Right.
That's a really nice price when you consider how much gaming we actually had going on.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was not a vendor convention.
And
we got
20 games recorded, and more than that actually pulled off. So, I mean, that doesn't include board games and the miniatures games and stuff like that we're running.
Of the
role-playing games, we got 40 sessions actually recorded, and they all turned out pretty well recorded-wise, too.
Well, when you think about it, on Saturday we had 16 tables running non-stop.
Oh, yeah. We were
every session.
Packed on that Saturday. Packed.
Yeah. That's what is that? That's 48 different things going on.
Jeremy, impressions?
Well, overall, I really liked it. I liked not having too many vendors. I liked just being able to... No, that's a mic. I can't talk into the mic.
Helps if you talk at the mic. At least, you know.
So, I'm happy that there wasn't too many vendors, because then you could focus on the actual gaming and not... It wasn't just trying to sell us stuff, which I always get kind of irritated.
Which is one of the irritating things about Gen Con is when you can't get into the games, the only other place you really have to go is the free play area where you can play with a bunch of people you don't know, or you wander around the Great Hall.
Yeah,
and I don't like people, so it's kind of difficult for me.
That's why every year we end up running our own games.
Because for the most part, people...
Yeah.
Just need to not talk to me.
Well, let's talk a little playing. Did you guys get any playing in while you were there?
Yeah.
I think you did it all.
No, I only ran stuff. I did not get any games actually played.
I played a bunch of stuff. Sorry, we're talking about bleeding wounds.
Yes, they're now bleeding wounds in the
chat. So that would be Dragon Age.
Yes, Dragon Age.
You think that game's a little bloody?
Though, actually...
I really liked Dragon Age.
No, Dragon Age was
awesome.
Sweet.
The
system is
we had a lot of
nice.
Fun playing
it's
in it.
Nice.
Eric did a great job running the fade. Mm-hmm. And
especially considering there was no...
They haven't ruled it.
But the mages were fairly balanced for what we were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the mages in Dragon Age. They're freaking glass cannons.
I enjoyed Dragon Age.
It's like, here we're going to blow the living daylights out of everything on the screen. Oh, I got hit, I'm dead.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
You four team members go slaughter everything in front of me while I blow everything up.
We're going to probably do at least a play review of Dragon Age at some point and get a thorough knockdown of that system, because I was very impressed.
Oh yeah,
I was impressed with what I heard.
For a player,
and I bought the box set, so
I had great fun running all the games that I ran. I ran a couple games of Clue Master Detective, and then I ran lots of Pathfinder and lots of Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah, and I actually only got to play in two things. I got to play in the Great Brain Robbery board game, which was a heck of a lot of fun. There's a snippet review of it that I put up of it. That was a lot of fun, and I got to play in an impromptu session of the Dragon Age game my brother ran, so he ran it twice. So, Jeremy, you played in the first one, I played in the second one, and I had a good time.
Well, it was just a great system.
Mm-hmm.
The way that... I mean, really, for the player, it was easy. I mean, if you roll doubles, I think it was, and you were still above whatever the success...
Right.
Difficulty was, you got to pick off of the
you got as many stunt points
stunts.
As your whatever your dragon
and
was,
I mean at one point I rolled a six, so you know that was a lot of stunts and
it's a nice little system, and the games I managed to play I had a good time, and I can say it. General consensus, the people I talked to is you know, and just me standing around looking, was people were rolling dice, people were having fun. So,
yeah,
and
I had,
that was my ultimate goal with this whole thing. Yeah, so.
I had no complaints from the people who actually played in my games. Mm-hmm. I did have apparently a complaint that some people had signed up for a game, but they didn't show up on time.
Yeah.
And so I started without them, and they complained about that, but it's not like I'm going to sit there and wait for them to show up.
It wasn't like
they were
a 15 couple
minutes late.
Yeah, they were like 20 minutes late.
20 minutes.
They were 15 minutes late.
15, 20 minutes late. I mean, and they came and talked to me, and I told them, was like, you know, I can't make the GM hold your spot. And 15, 20 minutes is generous.
Right.
To hold a spot.
Especially when you consider there were seven people sitting around the table wanting to play.
Exactly.
And I had three spots.
It's like we're on a time spot, and anyone who goes to a convention should be forewarned about this. If you show up late, expect your spot not to be there.
Yeah.
Especially on Sunday, because, you know, there was a lot of people there, and there weren't a lot of games scheduled because a bunch of them got canceled.
There wasn't as much time on Sunday because we did the
award ceremony and whatnot.
But what else did we play in? I played in Tomb of Horrors, or as we said, the Tomb of Whores.
Yes.
There were no whores, though.
No.
Which is kind of a...
Well, there might have been.
One monster. No, two monsters, but this... Ah! But the second monster is totally just... Ah, that was awesome.
Wrong? Was it wrong?
Well, we thought it was a demi-lich. And we decided that fighting it would be bad, so instead we just removed it from play. And then looted it.
How did you remove it from play? Did you seal it in its coffin or something?
No, we teleported it! Well, I think that one was recorded. Yeah. I could tell the whole story, but that would take
a long time. Yeah, that one is recorded, I think.
Yeah, that one's awesome.
Yeah, unfortunately,
people should listen to it.
Unfortunately,
and
my Pathfinder
doors
game
great.
Yeah, sadly, we lost all the Dragon Age and Call of Cthulhu stuff, plus one of the AD&D sessions was lost as well. So, sadly, unfortunately, with all big files moving around and whatnot, bound
they
to happen.
Corrupted.
So,
right.
I think we made off pretty well with getting 20 sessions.
Halfling
done,
rogues and halfling barbarians.
Oh yeah, and Space 1889 didn't make
that's
it.
I don't think there was halfling barbarians or rogues in Space 1889, so don't really care.
Oh, well, there you go. I think, you know, ultimately,
Charlie Park Wars.
What I thought worked. I mean, let's move into what we ran. I mean, I basically ended up running my feng shui game, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen 1988, twice, where we had people taking up the sort of a la League of Extraordinary Gentlemen type of comic book, but set in the 80s with you had B.A. Baracus as one of the characters. So was Johnny Five, Teen Wolf, Jessica Fletcher, MacGyver, Jack Burton, Ellen Ripley, and I can't remember the last one off the top of my head now. John McClane. John McClane. So
yeah, I would have loved to have done it so I could play as Jessica Fletcher, just for the fact that
yes, well, she was also armed with a .357 Magnum.
I just think it would have been hilarious,
and which she carried around in her own custom knitted purse.
Yeah. But I was running that at that point in time. I was running that was 6 to 10 on Saturday, wasn't it?
That was afternoon, 1 to 5.
I was running Shadows of Time.
1 to 5 on Friday, 1 to 5 on Saturday. Yeah. So.
And I was running Pathfinder Improvised the first day, and I was running Shadows of Time the second day.
Well, I still have it, and I could probably be persuaded to run it as a one shot for you guys at some point. Although I think I'm. Both games went very well. I think my favorite of the two is probably the second game. Although I think everybody walked away having a hell of a lot of fun with it. And I know I had with Feng Shui, it's just you have fun running it anyway. So sort of just a general rundown is the characters had to go steal Firefox 2.0 from the Russians because all of Americans' technology had been compromised.
By the MCP.
By the MCP, which had taken over a Whopper at NORAD and was trying to initiate the Skynet protocol. And what basically the quote-unquote story was, in the Voyager, MCP stirred itself in the Voyager 3 spacecraft, which was found in the future by Weyland-Yutani salvage, and then reactivated some old research information about the flux capacitor and traveled back in time to 1985, where it eventually worked its way into Whopper at NORAD. So, that was my quote unquote backstory script that I had for it. So.
Dun dun dun.
Yes, and of course, you know, once they get to NORAD, they had to fight Ed 209s, Terminators with jetpacks, and RoboCop.
Did they actually get RoboCop to change sides?
In the second game, yes, they got RoboCop to change sides. Andre was playing Jack Burton and managed to talk to him cop to cop, and that was just priceless funny. It was a lot of fun, and if you guys, it's a good 3.5 hour session, both of them, and you guys should check it out on the GamersHavenPodcast.com.
I think mine run awful close to 4 hours on all the game sessions I played.
You know, and they all had a lot of fun. Jack Burton, it was John McClane. My bad. Jack Burton both times won for best role player because the people playing him just were having a ball.
Come on, it's Jack Burton.
It's Jack Burton. You gotta love Jack Burton. And a little sneak peek for next year is I'm probably going to be running a sequel to it of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen 1977. Featuring, I believe, yes, John Shaft will be in there, as will Foxy Brown, Bruce Lee, Harry Callahan.
Hell yeah.
I was thinking Quint from Jaws should be in there, just as a nice oddball. But I had some ideas for that. So.
I think Brody would be more interesting to play. Come on, smile, open wide. Sorry, yeah. I just watched Jaws 1 and Jaws 2 the other day.
Oh yeah, that's great.
Smile, you son of a.
Yes. That's a sneak preview for next year, maybe. So we'll see. We'll see what's going to happen.
Salen doesn't know who Jack Burton is.
Yeah, Big Trouble in Little China, dear. She's pretty, but she hasn't seen a lot of movies, I'm afraid. My brother says it's because they don't have TV up in Canada.
But some of the funniest comedies I've seen lately came from Canada.
See, I'm not really sure those actually came from Canada, though. I think they came from, like, the border or something. I'm not quite sure Canada does have TV.
Yes.
But, oh, yeah, I'll tell you what, it's on a boot.
Back to the CantCon. what is it that... let's talk about the games you guys ran.
Well, I managed to give nightmares to one of my players in Call of Cthulhu, so my job is done.
Yes. You're good at that.
I made one of the players sleep with the lights on. That's when I know I've done a good job. The thing is one of the things that a lot of people don't think about with, like, Call of Cthulhu is that, yeah, there's these scary monsters, but the thing that terrifies people the most is when you take a common, everyday, ordinary thing that's very, mundane that you see all the time and then turn it into something sinister. Suddenly when that player is done with the game, like, that was a great game, and they're sitting there and they look over and there's that shadow, and they swear that shadow just moved because they're still in paranoid mode. Yeah.
Which reminds me, did you get my email about Guillermo del Toro?
Yes, he's doing Beyond the Mountains, Mountain of Madness.
In 3D, no less.
Yes, with James Cameron.
James Cameron as producer. That is going to be freaktastic. Wow. Anyway,
Cthulhu Blender? Well, yeah, a Cthulhu Blender. Actually, something that would be even more terrifying is taking a common household pet, like a cat, who just opened the door and went into the garage, a little bastard.
He's developing opposable thumbs. This is dangerous now.
And turning them into something that, you know, seems innocuous and for most of the game seems fine, and then at random times when it gets someone alone, kind of like the thing, the creature from the thing,
mm-hmm.
randomly kills people. You know, things like that really bother mm-hmm. people. You know, haunted houses go so far. Giant spiders and giant snakes can scare people who are, you know, phytophobic or arachnophobic. But putting something that is something that everybody runs into on a regular basis and then turning it into something that's abnormal and terrifying really hits the points on people and makes them really scared. So The Shadows of Time was the best game that I ran for horror-wise, it seems.
And I'm really sad that we lost that.
Yeah, there's nothing we can do about it. All I can say is that the players that played it thought it was awesome. You know, I had three female players and three male players.
I must agree with
some of
the people I've talked to that it's appropriate that we lost the Call of Cthulhu stuff because, you know, the old ones didn't want it out.
Yeah, the old ones blocked their our
ability. No. That will increase Cthulhu mythos for everyone.
We don't want them to know this. And so away it went.
Yeah, there you go. But you also ran other stuff.
I ran three Pathfinder games. All three were improvised.
Did you run it three times?
I ran it once on Sunday, once on Friday, and once on Saturday morning because I was bored. And I also ran a game of Clue Master Detective, which was great fun. The Saturday morning Pathfinder only had like three people, and I think they were only there for Saturday. And it was just like, well, I'm not doing anything. Anybody wants to play, that's fine. And they're like, hell yeah.
I think with that one, those guys, their session ended way early.
Oh, that was Sunday. Sunday, it was started, we had an hour. So I just started them off at a cave and said, go to town! And
the days kind of meshed for me. So.
The Friday game went great. There was a line from the Friday game that I will repeat probably for the rest of my life, and that's, Gretchen on fire! Because it is just great. And if that one survived, if you guys haven't listened to the Pathfinder Improvised Play, you have to listen to the Pathfinder Improvised Play.
I believe
it is hilarious.
I've got the episodes. I've got them downloaded to listen to. I just haven't had time.
I had a great time running all the Pathfinder games. The system ran much more smoothly since I had a bunch of people who had actually played.
Yeah.
So that went really well for me because I didn't have to explain the rules, and a lot of the players knew more about the system than I did, which was great because they helped me with the finer points of the stuff that I didn't know because I'm still learning the system. Call of Cthulhu, I ran the Death and Luxor, which ran great. It was very, very intense, but also on top of that, we kept a nice air of comedy to it. That way the players weren't super tense by it. Unfortunately, one of the players decided to destroy the seal that was holding the monster in.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, that was very smart. He threw a grenade. Good job. And that player knows who he is. It worked out well in the end. And the Madness in London Town... it was too slow-paced for a con. It was obvious you could tell that the person who wrote the first one, Death and Luxor, did not write Madness in London Town because it was much more methodical, much slower-paced. I mean, it had time limits. I had to set a stopwatch on three different occasions because there was like, players need 30 minutes for this, for interactions and stuff. I'm going, oh my god, I don't want to have to wait this long. But it's like, this will help them build up knowledge so they have information to pull back to. And the thing was, it didn't help giving them 30 minutes.
And good thanks to Black Blade Publishing, because they had copies of those.
Yes, that was actually, wasn't the person who let me borrow it. Thanks to Wes for letting me borrow Madness in London Town from Secret Skeleton Miniatures. He let me borrow it. He was willing to let me borrow the other one, but I did not have time to run the second one and third one. The third one is something in Leningrad, and it takes place in Russia, and it looked really cool. But I really wanted to do Madness in London Town because I thought it looked really good. The problem was it just was very, very slow-paced.
Mm-hmm.
the players got into combat situations where they shouldn't have gotten into combat situations only because they were there was nothing else to do. It was all, let's investigate this. Spend 45 minutes investigating this area, reading all this information off, and the players are, you know, expected to take notes and stuff. I'm going, okay,
it's not going to happen in a con.
Yeah, it's not going to happen in a con game. That game, the second adventure was obviously designed to be run probably in a 6-hour time slot, mm-hmm. and an environment where players have access.
Really, for that one, it sounds like a multiple session
yeah,
type of thing.
Or multiple session, yeah, which is unfortunate because I think it was. I think
well,
it was.
No,
it was much better than the first
adventures
one.
Adventures don't always translate to yeah. convention atmosphere at all. So,
honestly,
I mean, it sounds like the first one did pretty well.
Yeah, the first one did really well for the length of time. Honestly, the second one I thought was a much better mm-hmm. adventure. It just mm-hmm. was not. I couldn't compress it for time.
Yeah.
And so all the Pathfinder games went like Pathfinder, you know, find mm-hmm. the monster, slay the baddies, go search for treasure, save the damsels.
Yeah.
We didn't have any saving the damsels in any of the games I played, but, you know, that's a common premise.
All right, well, Jeremy?
We're talking about Twoony and Loonies.
I see that, but what games did you run at KCon?
Right, so...
Is that $20 Canadian? So that's $5 American?
I was supposed to run a suzerain game.
All the suzerains. I think only two suzerain games ended up running.
Only two people...
One. No, two. Two random.
Only one person seemed to have a ticket that showed up, but two people were supposed to have tickets, and I just forgot. So, but the first game I ran was Star Wars D6, which hopefully next year... next year I will not have a raging headache at that time, and hopefully it'll run a lot better. It went okay. Then I ran the Pirates game, Savage World Pirates 1. That one went okay too. I also ran Savage World Pirates 2. I didn't like how that one ran at all.
Oh yeah.
I'm gonna have to tweak that. The players, I could tell, didn't really like the ending that much, and I don't know. I just didn't like it. I didn't really get any feedback on it other than, huh, that was interesting. And I'm like, oh, crap. That wasn't good feedback. So I think that's... Did I run something else? No, I think that's all.
No, I don't think you did. I think that sounds about... Because I think the last thing you ran was the
Pirates 2.
Pirates 2, yeah. I mean, all in all, I only ran a few things. I ended up canceling the Suzerain one that I was going to run. Is one, lack of interest, and two, I just didn't have the time. And the HeroClix thing, no one really wanted to play either, so I canceled that just fine, too. I really didn't mind that at all.
Yeah, it was kind of a bummer that there was really no interest in the Savage Suzerain, and it seems like a very, very cool premise.
Well, it was a fun game. But when I played in...
Yeah, you played the Dr. Ballard.
Yeah, when I played Dr. Ballard, it was great. It's just, we didn't have enough interest. And next time, while I really think we would love to see him, you know, contacting us again, just...
Mm-hmm.
He really can't put demands on how many games we run.
The
because,
size of the con we have, we can't
unfortunately,
do six adventures
yeah.
for him. It's just not going to happen. It is a cool setting. It is a very cool setting. I think.
I've been reading the Savage Worlds of Cthulhu. That looks really awesome too.
Realms of Cthulhu. Yeah. Yeah. I'll be getting a hard copy of that at Gen Con.
So that'll make it much easier to read.
I'm trying to get a loony.
You are a loony.
You're a loony. Well, you're gonna meet Salen on Tuesday.
That's why I'm making sure she's actually putting some loonies in her stuff.
Are you going to buy a loony off?
Yes.
Alrighty then.
She has a loony?
That's what... I don't know.
What is a loony?
I think it's Canadian money of some sort. Two loonies make a twoony.
All right. Well, looking at wrapping up this this kind of random discussion we're having here...
I thought it went well. I hope to see it go better next year. I have learned my lesson. I don't think I'll be running more than one game a day.
I'll probably run some different stuff next year.
And I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to run Call of Cthulhu, because everybody wants Call of Cthulhu. And I'll probably start making that here shortly and getting it ready.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm probably going to run, because I didn't run anything this year, I think I'm going to run an Earthdawn game again, like I ran for the Christmas game for Rowan, because everybody seemed to have a good time with that.
Mm-hmm.
A Toonie, sorry.
Toonie. And
I'm not Canadian.
Yeah, what can we say?
They barely speak English.
And then I think I might try running I'd love to get my hands on Aces and Eights and try running a game of that. But I've got to...
I'll see what I can do.
I have to find an Aces and Eights book not $80.
I'll be wandering about on Sunday at Gen Con begging for review copies of stuff.
So. Yeah, I'd love to get a copy of Aces and Eights to run for the con. Because I'd love to do a Western that's not Deadlands, because I know I can't do Deadlands. Because Deadlands is the weird and
it's the Weird West.
Yeah, the Weird West. And I want to do the Wild West. You know, I want the Stranger with No Name.
Sure.
Type game.
You could do a Savage Worlds, though.
Wild West. I really like to see this Ace and Eights. It's won a lot of awards.
D6 one.
And I'm very, very interested in seeing how the system actually goes, because all I've gotten to do is take a look at the book and take a look at the artwork, thumbing through it at Gen Con, because I couldn't afford it, because the only copy they had left by the time I got around to it was their leather-bound limited edition, which was $90. And it's I can't justify $90 on a book. It's one of the reasons why I don't have the new rule set for Warhammer. I can't justify $75 for a book.
Mm-hmm.
It's an awesome book. I've read through it. It looks great. Layout's perfect. But the thing is I still can't justify $75.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, money's tight all around.
Yeah.
I agree. Let me ask this of you guys. What is it that you liked at CanCon?
Just playing.
I liked the fact that I got to meet some of the people that listened to
the con. Meeting the people.
Listen to the podcast.
Playing the games that we did.
I very much enjoyed running the games that I ran, and I did play Clue Master Detective because,
I like the people I met there.
See, next year you should do a double feature on that and do Clue Master, or you should do Kill Dr.
Cool.
Lucky and then Clue Master Detective.
Oh, that would be awesome. Yeah. I'd play that.
Kill Dr. Lucky, yeah, next year I'll run Kill Dr. Lucky Deluxe, then followed by Clue Master Detective.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to kill Mr. Body, right. Dr. Lucky.
Sure.
And then figure out who did it.
Yeah, I think that'd be fun.
Yeah. Lights go out. Everyone
dies.
You
playing that, and it crossed my mind while you were doing that. So you could do that next year.
Yeah.
With his little dog.
Yeah, and his little dog too.
Little dog too. Yes.
Yeah. Because those rules make it just hilarious.
Oh yeah.
The dog just moves one room towards the master.
That's a fun little game.
Yeah, I agree.
But Jeremy, what did you like?
I liked how it really was a gaming convention and not just a
sales convention.
A sales convention.
That's.
I mean, it's great to have stuff come out at a convention, but there was the right number of people, so I could hang out with people, meet some new people that were all really nice, and just have a good time. So
I'm glad everybody liked the brownies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I do apologize to the person who found a hair in the brownie. I'm not entirely certain where that came from.
Hey,
the brownies were baked in a house.
As long as it was a long hair, that's all that matters.
Yeah. Long hair and not curly.
Right.
Three cats, two people with longish hair. You're going to get hair in something cooked here. So next year, I think we're going to
actually... You didn't flavor them with cat hair?
No.
I really liked the vendors that we had.
The vendors we had were awesome.
I certainly hope they come back next year.
I do, too.
I think they all did a great... They were the right mix.
Yeah. I think Gamers Ground said that they want to come back already.
Oh, yeah. They were ready to write me a check for tables next year.
One of the things I would be excited about next year is they talked about it. They didn't do it, but they had Warhammer merchandise, and they didn't bring any. And so maybe next year they'll bring.
Well, I know they wanted more space than I could give.
Yeah,
them.
Yeah, I hope
they didn't have a lot of space.
Next year we're gonna have the bigger space next year, and I'll basically be able to give them a good amount of space.
Hopefully
year.
They bring hit location dice, because I never think about buying hit location dice. And they did not have any. I know it seems like such a small thing.
They're on our forums.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
they popped in on there.
I really, really liked GamerGround. If
they don't have a storefront, they just go to cons.
Yeah.
Right.
I thought they were really cool. I'd love to see...
I was happy to see Secret Skeleton Minis, their stuff, and they did really well.
Their miniatures were awesome. I bought all of them.
I
bought all of them I could afford.
Yeah.
I bought the Witch.
I bought a couple. I bought one
and
or
Robin
ones,
bought
and they
something.
Gave me the Celestial Pug that they had.
That's awesome.
I was like, this is awesome. He's like, here you go. But I bought one of the guys. I'm like, this is my next indie character, because that is an awesome mini.
Yeah, they had some great miniatures there, and the pre-painted ones were incredible. I wish I could have afforded. They had one
Robin bought
their
one.
The pre-painted ones that they had
weren't horribly expensive, but I was flat broke.
Well, Robin,
that Wereshark they had was
Robin
awesome.
Bought
I'm
one.
Like, dude, I don't have no place for a Wereshark in my game, but I would find one.
They're doing a land shark.
Yes, I know. To scale.
Yes,
shark.
A two scale.
That's gonna be awesome. It's gonna be like this big.
Yeah, it's gonna be giant.
It's gonna be like 3.5 inches long.
And our other the other publisher gentleman who did
Black Blade Publishing.
Black Blade Publishing, yeah. That was really great. And actually
I love the fact that he had tons of different products.
I've already written up house rules for the Sword and Wizardry game.
Yeah, that's how really cool.
Well, just triggered some things in me, and I'm like,
and I'm going to be.
We still have one of those books, don't we?
The
Sword and Wizardry.
I don't remember. I'll have to check all that stuff.
Well, actually, just go to their site. Mm-hmm. You can download those rules for free.
Yeah.
You can download the PDF. I like reading the books, though.
Well, yeah, and I've got one of those books.
Well, you know, and we want to support them, too, because they're local. They're Wichita guys.
Yeah,
they're awesome.
I hope they come back, and I probably will purchase a few more things from them.
Yeah. Next year, I fully intend to be working quite regularly and having a steady paycheck so I can buy stuff.
Because I'd like to buy a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you guys this. What did you not like, if anything?
Again, most of the stuff we just talked about.
We already talked about the things that we didn't like at the retrospective.
Unfortunately, the organization meeting.
Yeah. The one thing I didn't like wasn't anybody's fault. It was, unfortunately, in the table next to us in one of our games, someone was having some issues. And myself and a couple of my players were getting the wrong side of the issues. And
yeah, unfortunately, that was just due to the fact that we had limited space.
Limited space.
We were really crammed in there.
So yeah, especially on Saturday.
It'll be nice to be spread out a little bit more. The noise was a little... I guess that would be my actual complaint.
Yeah,
it was
Saturday
difficult to hear the players, and it was difficult for the players to hear the GMs.
Yeah. Yeah. And next year we're going to be a bit more spread out, so
yeah.
It won't be that bad.
But
I know a bit more now as far as what to do with the layout and all that stuff. So.
You have to remember, we've both been to Gen Con, and we've gamed at Gen Con. It's just as loud, if not louder, at Gen Con.
I don't like that, though.
No, it's problematic, but the thing is there's not really much you can do about it when you have that many games running in a small space.
Yeah. But also at that point, or in Gen Con, there's just too many people, so that generates enough noise.
You know what would be awesome? Would be to have a mic and headphones set up into the table with a mixer and have the recorder into that.
Yeah, that's going to cost lots of money.
Yeah.
It won't happen. So.
No, it won't happen.
So if somebody gives us lots of money... We will run the con however you want.
If I win the war,
we will have cheerleader. We could have CanCon cheerleaders.
Yes. If I don't win the lottery, Jeremy will just see Jeremy
Cowboy,
in a cheerleader outfit.
The Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders.
And you can pay for him to stop cheering. That will be what.
And not wear the outfit.
And not wear the outfit. You'll pay to stop cheering. You have to pay more for him to not wear the outfit for 5 minutes.
Actually, I know someone whose sister is a Chiefs cheerleader.
Well, there you go. You can pay even more for it to have them switch out.
Yeah.
I think I like this plan. I'm proud.
We obviously need more furries.
Yes.
No.
We need a whole room of furries.
Oh God.
We'll turn on the black light. We'll get like things as flashing.
You can run your own con, Jeremy. But I think that's about all we need. We've been going on for about half an hour, and I think that's good. Any final thoughts as far as CanCon? Maybe CanCon next year.
CanCon next year.
We'll work on the times for things.
Yeah, I'm hoping we can get something close to or at around the same like weekend structure as what we had this year. Because that'll help.
I'm going to be looking at probably booking in January, and basically I'm going to get the weekend after the 4th of July, basically.
Yeah, and I would like to see some more set tables.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get all that sorted out. I know for myself is just make sure I'm going to have to either redo the pirate game or do something different.
I would love to see local artwork. Mm-hmm. I'd also love to see local people who are known.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is I know a lot of them are very, very busy, and they also cost a lot of money. But one of the things is I would love to see, like, Jim Butcher come and game, because apparently he used to game.
I'm still trying to set up an interview with him.
So. On his website, he has an open invitation to anybody that comes to Kansas City, Missouri, to come play Nero with him, because apparently he does Nero.
A lot of LARP, yeah.
But it would be great to get him into a tabletop game just to hear him, you know, run his ideas. And, you know, it would be even better would be to have him show up at one of the Dresden Files role-playing games and have him play as Harry.
Oh, yeah, the old
Harry Blackstone.
The ultimate awesomeness would be would be good old Bruce
Copperfield Dresden
showing up.
Bruce Campbell?
Yes.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
That's not. Yeah, he's
it's
way
not,
too busy.
But if we had enough money, it would happen because he'd be like, Bruce, you just need to cancel everything. Well, I can't really. Here's a bigger pile of money. Oh, you should really cancel everything. Our jet is already waiting for you.
Yes. Like I said, if we win the lotto, that'd be great. All right. Well, we will go ahead and wrap that up, and we will be back right after this.
You paying attention now?
Yes.
All right. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone, where we don't know what we're talking
about. Hey, we do know what we're talking about. You know, we called the whole Hugo Weaving Red Skull thing, remember?
Oh, right, fine. Where was it? The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about all kinds of gaggles of...
Aaron, could you cut it with the gaggles thing? It's not working for me.
All right, fine. The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games.
Don't forget that we talk about, you know, Bruce Campbell and Christopher Lee, obviously.
Natalie Portman.
All right, guys! I'm trying to do a commercial for the Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games, tabletop gamings, all kinds of other geek stuff.
You mean that show we broadcast on Ustream?
Yes!
Wednesday, 8 Central Standard Time.
Right, at redphonezone.com. Now, can you guys just give me a minute to get this promo done?
Sure, sorry, dude.
Yeah.
All right, from the top. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone.
Aaron, we need a tiebreaker. Okay, who would win in a fight with Galactus?
Anti-Monitor.
Galactus and Anti-Monitor. Come on.
I think the more important question would be who would win in a fight between me and you two idiots.
I guess we don't know what we're talking about. And we are back, and today on the three-parter, I'm going to be talking a little bit about some news that was sent our way from our friends over at Q Workshop. Jeremy has a review, and
yes.
So does Nathan,
yes,
oddly
I do.
Enough. So we're going to kick it off with just this little bit of news that I've got.
This just in. The news.
All right. Well, the news I got from our Polish friends over at Q Workshops at q-workshop.com,
who are awesome.
Who are very awesome. They have they're the guys who put out the Any Award winning Cthulhu dice many years ago,
which I have,
which you do have, and they put out the Deadlands dice that I use for Deadlands, which are very cool. They are implementing, starting on August 2nd, what's called their Dice Strike or their Dice Quake, where they have a new method of tooling and finishing their dice, which is actually cheaper and is going to increase the quality on their dice. And so their dice, their prices are going to go down. They're going to have new packaging, and they will have some new sets coming out. So some new sets, including what we have reviews up on our site for of the Celtic dice, the Elven dice, and my personal favorite, the Forest dice.
Yeah, the Forest dice are flipping off.
The Forest dice are very cool. Those came in, and I immediately
Ethan snagged them.
These are cool. It's going to be hard to read some of them, though, but they're cool.
The Q Workshops has come a long way. I mean, they used to be really hard to read, I think, but I think the new ones are a heck of a lot easier.
Yeah,
you kind of exist.
And I'm
going to
be talking to them, speaking of CantCon, I'm going to be talking to them for a like a custom winner die for CantCon for like game winners.
Well, you kind of expect that when you get a dice that's like a designer dice.
Mm-hmm.
You expect that. That's something
well,
you just kind of have to...
Well, stick to the regular CantCon D6s
right.
next year and have the special dice be from them, I think is going to be a little bit more cost-effective, and they can do whatever kind of die we need. So
right.
D20, D, you know, D4s, whatever. So, yeah, cool stuff. Dice Strike, go to q-workshop.com or visit our site, gamershavenpodcast.com, and head over that way. Take a look at what they've got, but it's going up August 2nd, so check it out.
The review.
And And today I'm actually going to do a review. Big surprise there, since I've been reviewing stuff for like the last, 12 or 13 Gamers Havens now. I actually just recently finished a book, and I wanted to talk about it. I picked up a copy of Jim Butcher's Harry Dresden Stormfront, which is book one of the Dresden Files.
Mm-hmm.
And read through it. I think it took me 2 days. And it's not a large book, but it's not a small book. It's about 315 pages, I think. It's quite easy to tell that it's his first book, but it's also very easy to tell that the author, Jim Butcher, has a great amount of potential in the setting and in the character he's using, because the story flowed very smoothly. It was written very well from a first-person perspective, told from the position of Harry, who's, I guess his full name is Harry Dresden Copperfield Dresden.
Mm-hmm.
Blackstone Copperfield Dresden.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. I have the book somewhere around here. I very much enjoyed it. The fact that I read it in 2 days is an indicative of the fact that I enjoyed it, because usually I take my time and read books, but I just kept reading it and didn't put it down. The first day I first picked it up, my wife goes, "How far are you into it?" "Oh, I'm on page 9. The next day she asked me, "How far are you into it?" "I'm on page 175. When she went to bed, I just started reading on the couch, and just I read until I was so tired I couldn't keep my eyes open anymore. It's very... a very interesting story, in my opinion. I like the setting and the premise. It takes place in Chicago and the modern days with a modern wizard, which is just not something you normally come into. Yeah, there's some small problems with the writing and some small problems with the I guess it's called the stanzas, which I don't really have much room to talk about considering I'm not an English major. I can say this that much, though. I very much enjoyed the book. I love the beginning, I love the climax, and I love the resolution of the story, so much so that I've been looking for the second book, Full Moon, because I want to own a copy of it, and I'm having problems finding it anywhere. So it's
probably between print runs,
yeah,
I would guess.
So I'll endeavor to continue to look for it until I find it, because I want a copy of it. But I highly recommend that anybody that likes contemporary fiction and the contemporary fantasy fiction, pick up any of the Dresden File books. I'd recommend starting with the first one, because they're actually a continuous story. He's also got another series that's actually a high fantasy series.
Yeah.
And I cannot think of the name of it for the life of me. I think the name of the world's like Alara or something.
Sounds about right.
I have
read Full Moon, and I really like Stormfront. Full Moon's better.
Yeah.
Full Moon is really good.
From what I've heard talking to people is the first book okay.
The games get progressively better and progressively good. And the Codex first book Alara. Is excellent.
Codex Alara is the name of the series.
That's right.
The way it was explained to me is the first book's pretty good. Second book is better. Third book's even better than the second book. Fourth book is incredible. And the fifth book is just amazing. And they stay with that amazing through the rest of the books so far that he's released. So I'm really excited about reading the next one. On top of that, I like werewolves, and apparently the second book has to deal a lot with lycanthropy, and so that really interests me.
It's actually very cool.
So I really want to get my hands on it.
Three different kinds of werewolves. Very cool.
Three different kinds. Awesome. So there's like different types of tribes of them.
No. Three different kinds of werewolves.
So like...
Very cool.
Crinos, Hispos, and stuff like that?
No. Really, it's like you can become a werewolf in three different ways.
Whoa.
So...
Sweet.
I don't want to spoil it for you, but it's a very good book.
Yes, I'm very excited to find a copy of it and read it.
If you're looking to find a just to read it, I think we still have the paperback and we can loan it to you. But
I want to own a copy of it too, but I want to read it. I'll see if I can
find it if Eric hasn't gotten rid of it. But yeah, it's really good. It's one of those that I'm a slow reader, and I burned through that sucker in less than a week.
Yeah.
So I was just like, This is so cool.
Yeah, it's the first book I've read in a long time where I just didn't want to put it down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've read, this year alone, I've probably read 140 books, and this is the first book that I've actually finished this quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I picked up all of the Sword of Truth series and read through those, and let me tell you, by the time you get to the fifth book, you're really slogging. I mean,
slogging. And I'll keep my eyes open for paperback of it. When I'm at Gen Con, whatnot. Yeah. If I spot one, I'll go ahead and grab it.
Because we don't have any locally, and I could order one locally, but they're saying it'll take anywhere from 10 to 12 weeks to get it.
It's got to be between printings.
And I just go, I want to read it now. And I went to the library, and they're like, well, we don't have any in stock, but we can get one on request from another place. You'll have it for 2 weeks, but it'll take us 12 to 16 days to get it. And I'm like, I want to read it now. I'm not a patient person.
I'll see if we still... I'm pretty sure we still have it. And yeah, I'll try to grab it for you if we do. So, but yeah, it's a good book. It's a good book. I not so interested in the role-playing game myself, but the first two books, anyway, I've read, I like. So, hey, there you go. Jeremy.
The review.
All right, so I am reviewing Swords and Wizardry Core Rules. This is actually basically, as they call it, D&D Zero, like version zero.
Retro D&D. It's D&D 0.0, yeah, or 0.5.
And what's awesome about it is it goes way back to the beginning, and things are really, really simple. It's very free-flowing, but it also, anybody who's played D&D can pick up this book. I basically read it at the con and could run a game right then. I then reread it, and the nice thing is they make it quite clear that you're going to want to have some house rules, and that's okay. And I've already written house rules for it because I'm going to run a campaign in this. But this, you can download this, Swords and Wizardry Core Rules, from their website for free. I really like the book itself. And, I mean, some of the things are way back. You guys remember how certain demi races could only be certain classes up to certain levels. Well, you know, that it has that in there. Not one of the pluses necessarily, but it's old school.
I like the old school D&D, so.
You really only have three classes. Cleric, Magic User, and Fighting Man. Basically, the Fighting Man is any type of warrior. Magic User is any type of arcane caster. And Cleric is any sort of divine caster. They have all your really old school spells. The thing is, the spells are... I would not want to be a player fighting against an enemy mage, because some of the spells are so not balanced. And I think most of us can remember that way back when.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend, if you just want a quick, fun little D&D-esque game, just to kind of one-shots or even a short campaign, you know, you should check this out. We'll have a link to their website. It's from Blackblade Publishing. And it's any award nominated. I don't know how many years ago. It wasn't obviously this year, but whenever. And the nice thing about this first book is it has all the rules you need. It has monster lists. It has magic items. Back when magic items were just nasty, it has the monk and the thief alternate classes. But back before the monk was ridiculous, when he was just fun, everybody can do... Crap, another golden corpulent door tooth. Okay, anyway. back when everybody could search, the stench of mildew emanates from the wet dungeon walls. That's definitely like this. I mean, really. Okay, that review was totally just insane, but I'm going to run a Thera. Basically, it's going to be prehistory.
Using Swords and Wizardry, nice.
Yes. Very and cool. I've already got the house rules written up. I just got one or two other things to do.
I just sent an email to John Hirschberger to see if they're gonna have those, if they're gonna have their stuff at Gen Con. I'm gonna probably buy one of those.
It's for
support reasons and whatnot.
And the nice thing about their website is if you go there, you can download all the character sheets and all the extra little things.
Mm-hmm.
Now again, this is a harsh game. I'm changing a couple things just because I remember playing mages
and realizing that
Mages died.
Boy, I suck.
Mages died if a breeze
now,
knocked them off.
Mages do
them
have
over.
A 1 die 6 minus 1 hit points, though. That's better than a d4. I mean, that's something. But, like, they're monsters. And the neat thing is, they actually have... They don't use Thaco. They use the BAB, base attack bonus. And you can either do your ascending armor class or descending.
Mm-hmm.
And they have rules for both. So basically, you could take the Swords and Wizardry, and you could take any 3.0, 3.5, Pathfinder, even 4th edition book. And if you like monsters in it, you could just grab.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like it. I don't think it's going to replace my 4E. I think what's going to happen is Swords and Wizardry is for that old-time,
sure. old
you know,
school
old-school
one.
Barbarians. There's not, you know... That type
kick
of feel.
Kick in the door.
Right. And then
take all
the 4E's right. for the, okay, it's fantasy, yes, but it's more modern.
Sure.
You know, that type of thing. It's more... So I really like it. I if you are a GM who can think on their feet and who's also ready for just, you know, letting things go, maybe a little bit of house rules, just if you like rules. You know, we like rules. But do Swords and Wizardry core rules. It's a great book, and the art's neat. It's not going to be like some of the art that you're used to, but it's old school art, and it's just a lot of fun.
Cool.
I'm going to run it.
Okay, Carol, now you take these notes, and then we're about ready to begin.
Oh, okay, sure.
Well... What are you two doing here? We don't record until tomorrow.
We're making a new promo for All Games Considered, since you were dragging your feet getting one written.
Hey!
She's right, though. It's been too long, and a lot has happened since the last promo.
Yeah, like winning the Gold Ennie for Best Gaming Podcast for 2009.
You mean the one you try to work into the conversation every other episode?
Hey!
Now, there's more than that. There's the new format.
You mean the main show every 2 weeks and the assortment of other features in the meantime?
Right, like games you may never have heard of, the review and news shows.
Don't forget the RPG buffet.
And on the main show, we have more time to focus on gaming topics.
Like board and card games.
And RPGs.
And the people who play them, from the old school to the newest of the new.
But no changeling. Hey!
Find out more at agcpodcast.info. All games considered, because there's more than one true way to play.
And we are back, and today we've got a little stockpile of some random encounters that we need to go over. Like, for example, I've got an email from Dreadstar talking about he's going through some of our back episodes and talking about episode 47. Said, sorry this is coming to you late, but I'm just listening to these episodes now, and I had a few thoughts to put to you about fantasy accuracy. This was obviously our fantasy accuracy episode.
We did talk about fantasy accuracy.
It was almost a year ago, as you had put it in this episode. Anyway, my problems with fantasy accuracy has nothing to do with politics, although this is its own topic. No, I have more issues with simpler stuff, like the design of your average fantasy village, and what services would be available for your passing adventurer slash merchant slash trading caravan. A good example is the typical D&D smithy that your adventuring group may encounter in your average campaign village. To understand this, you'd look at what a smithy's job is. Well, he makes and fixes iron, iron-made items throughout and around the village. For this, the smith needs, well, iron. Now, where does he get that from? To get iron that he can, say, make a horseshoe with, iron ore needs to be smelted somewhere. Does he do it himself, or does he go somewhere else to pick up a supply of it? If he does it himself, he needs a supply of iron ore and charcoal to make iron from the iron ore. Suddenly, a simple smithy turns into two other jobs. We need to know who does them. And that doesn't take into account if he makes tools that need some kind of handle out there of leather or wood. Two more items he needs to source from somewhere else. Suddenly the blacksmith, if he is doing it all by himself, will be spending more time digging in a bog for bog iron ore, burning wood for charcoal, killing animals and skinning them and tanning them to make into leather to use with his handle, and so on and so forth. The same process of pulling any particular role can be applied to your average fantasy inn, and not to mention the general goods store where your first level party gets all their stuff at dungeons for that dungeon just out of town. It's a detail that gets us all into trouble here. So I think what he's really saying is you don't need to be too accurate with it, which is, I think, essentially what we came to.
I think we said that. But there's some accuracy that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and we've talked a bit about the accuracy and whatnot in the fantasy game, but I think ultimately we got hung up a bit on culture accuracy and yeah.
Well, see, the thing is
slavery.
The common thing that goes along with a lot of the blacksmiths is it's assumed that that if they're not finding their own iron to create new items, what they do is any of the broken tools or anything get reforged back and get smelted back down, and then are turned back into new implements. Because that was a very common thing for them to do, because iron was very uncommon.
Mm-hmm. What happens if a player asks? Maybe randomly a player wants to know, where are they getting this iron?
Yeah. And maybe you could use it as a quest, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I get it from, you know...
Yeah, I get it from this mine, but...
It comes up in a bucket from the well. Right. I don't know where it comes from.
Or I get it from this mine, but now there's goblins up there.
Yeah. You guys can help me out with that, right? Although I do think it's funny that some towns would absolutely hate adventurers. Hate them with passion.
Oh, yeah.
It's like they come in and they break your economy.
Yep.
And
you
bring
go.
With them chaos.
Right.
And monsters and death.
And
well, not even that. They go and they kill the goblins that have been terrorizing. Yes, that's great. But then they come in with all this crap. And you're like, we don't need 400 suits of slimy leather armor.
But some of the villages learn. They go, I see adventurers. Okay, everyone.
Add another
all
zero
of your
to those
prices are 200-300% more. They won't know. They only pay in gold. They don't expect change. I need a piece of bread. Well, that would be 10 gold.
Man, that's
okay,
expensive.
Okay, well, I mean, that's okay. Kind of expensive, but I'm out in the middle of nowhere here.
Oh, yeah, supplies are really hard to get out here.
And when they come back, they turn the whole village into, like, frickin' Las Vegas.
Yes.
I mean, there would be people that would be like, oh, sweet, adventurers. But then there are other people, yeah, they're like,
oh, God, crap.
Send them away.
No, not them.
They're going to run into, like, the local bully. The bully's going to pull a knife. The mage is going to, like, cast a fireball. The mayor's house is going to burn down. You know, the fire's going to try to stop it and accidentally stab my, you know, son. The cleric's going to, like, try to heal everybody. And that's going to attract the attention of some evil god over there, which we, you know, occasionally throw.
And then it's a big domino effect.
Yeah, it just
gets
worse. It just becomes a cluster smurf.
Yes. All right, moving on to the next email. We got an email here. We got a few from Gary the Pagan. The eighth pagan, you know, who has done something to the previous seven, as we know, and who also works for the British Postal Service, had something to say about our idea for trained dolphins. Said, trained dolphins, you're not thinking this through. Waterproof packaging is costly, and it's going to be slow. You already have the perfect solution to the problem, Mansquito. Just introduce a bit of homing pigeon DNA into the mix, and the problem is sorted. And if the word pound is so offensive to whoever it was, use quid.
Quid! Go. We could use quid.
So instead of
not
10 pounds, it's 10 quid.
Why are we talking about this whole water, you know, protecting the items? Because I don't care about that.
That's true.
I do.
Well, but that you have to package it yourself. All we do is train the dolphins to carry it. But if you pay extra quid, we'll send Mansquito.
Yes. All right, we then got an email from Chris Kimball. Chris Kimball says, hi, guys. I've been a listener for the past several months and find it refreshing to zone out listening to podcasts while I work. I'm a fantasy illustrator and graphic artist. I recently, like in the months I've been listening to your show, have done work for small RPG companies and on their new book. It's an original system that uses tarot cards and will be premiering at this year's Gen Con. They're really really great guys. They put a lot of hard work into the book. I'm really proud of the art I've contributed to the project, but their business sense is a bit lacking, so I've taken it upon myself to try and stir up some noise about the game. The site is at pantheonpress.com, and the name of their game, it's PANTHEONPRESS.com.
I don't know how to spell Pantheon.
Not everybody does. And their Nobis City States has been nominated for an Annie this year. But I think the game they're talking about is Fortune's Fool, which will be coming out at Gen Con. I may stop by and see if they'll throw a review copy our way. But check it out, pantheonpress.com, and take a look at it. Let's see.
I've seen the Nobis City States game before. That was actually pretty cool.
Ah, yes.
I don't remember where I saw it, but I actually read through a bunch of it for the player's guide, and it was awesome. I like the cover, too.
We got an email from Hellboy.
Hellboy? Yeah,
Hellboy. Hellboy awesome. Sent us an email. Apparently, Hellboy listens to our show. That's really cool. We like Hellboy. You know, Hellboy's awesome. Being a dude, he looks so much like Ron Perlman painted red. Hey, are you guys ever going to go back and finish Freedom City? That podcast was my favorite out of all the others, and I'd really like to see it come back, or at the very least, have you guys do another Mutants and Masterminds game. Well, funny you should mention that, Mr. Hellboy. Odd Hellboy's
did
asking
he fight
about
Nazis.
Hellboy, yes, he did.
He has fought Nazis.
He's fought a lot of things. We are when the Deadlands game is done. The Deadlands game should be wrapping up in about two or three sessions, and we will be moving on to a Mutants and Masterminds 3rd edition game with that group. And actually, our fine listener Tracy or Rolling Twenties on the forum will be Skyping in and participating in said game. So. We will look forward to that. I believe give people a sneak preview, the going theme for it is going to be Canadian Crusaders West Coast. So, sorry, Hellboy, there's not going to be any Hellboy in it, but you know, maybe sad. You could do a guest spot. You know, who knows?
That would be awesome.
Let's see.
Uh oh. What?
What? Oh, what? Nothing.
No. Last post.
Hmm? What? Oh. Not looking at it. We're getting live feedback as we are doing this. Yes, yes, well, you know, stuff. I'm going to move on from this.
Yes. No one talk about the awkward moments. really, everything he said isn't going to happen. We're not doing Mutes and Master.
Yeah, we're actually gonna start playing Warhammer on Sunday.
We're gonna play Diceless, some crappy game that you don't like.
Yes,
we're gonna play.
All right.
Yeah.
We have an email from Jonathan. I'm wondering if this is Jonathan from Rollerball, maybe. I don't know. I've been enjoying your work, and I've got a couple of things to share. I'm a recovering RPG-er. How are you recovering RPG-er? Is it like a recovering alcoholic?
You game less?
And I think I'm using your recordings as methadone to stay on the wagon. Okay, that's probably a good thing. You know, we want you to stay on the wagon. Roll dice. I started by listening to your first Shadowfell actual play, and then your second, and then random actual play recordings, and I finally listened to all, and that's every single little bit of Enough Room to Die. In the last 3 weeks, that's episode 1 to 26 and a half in 3 weeks. Thanks for letting me keep my hand in vicariously. Yeah. Wow, dude. You must do data entry or something. Yeah, 3 weeks, that's 26 for at least 4 hour episodes of good old Deadlands. So we're glad you're listening, glad you're enjoying it. He sent us an image that he says I should run a campaign off of. I will go ahead and post that in the chat room for our lovely people. Let's see if it'll actually let me. Yes, it should, because I'm running it.
It removed it.
It removed it?
Yeah, it says,
URL removed. Oh, well. Too bad. I guess people don't get to see it at all. so there's that.
got an email from Mark Lambert. I've been a listener for a while now, and it's one of the few podcasts that I regularly listen to. Thanks, Mark. Anyway, we just put up a project on Kickstarter.com to try and get some funding to help us with the production costs of two games. The project consists of The World of Trexlin, a system-independent fantasy RPG campaign setting in a fantasy-themed card game, Zypher. In addition to the video on Kickstarter site describing the whole project, we have a short version on the Trexlin webpage that provides a brief overview of the campaign setting at Trexlin, TrexLin.com. Just wanted to, he wanted to see if we would mention you on the show. This is us mentioning you on the show. Supporters can get a lot of cool rewards, copies of the finished setting, card game, original art, etc., etc. So just, I wanted to throw that shout out to Mr. Mark Lambert. Thanks for listening, and everyone go check out Kickstarter, Kickstarter.com, and just look for Trexlin, I think, T-R-E-X-L-I-N, and that'll pop up. Or go to Trexlin.com. I got an email from, let's see, Dwight Baird. Dwight Baird, so last year we released and published a great new strategy baseball board game called Extra Innings. It's not a game of luck. There are no dice nor spinners. Aww. Dice?
Or spinners.
Players do not roll double sixes to hit home runs. Extra Innings is a game of strategy which duplicates almost exactly what happens on the baseball diamond. Each player must choose every pitch and every play, and every play in the game of baseball is in extra innings. If you're currently looking for U.S. placement as you specialize in board games, I'm sending you along, wondering if your session would be helpful to us. Well, there you go. I just mentioned you. Moving on.
If they want to send us a review copy, we'll
definitely take a look at it. Yeah.
Baseball.
So?
Baseball can be cool.
Have you ever watched the T-Bones? They're
actually
fun.
T-Bones are supposed to be really awesome.
They're fun.
And we got another email from Gary the Eighth Pagan.
Yay, Gary!
So just listen to your any show search and have basement. Few comments. Yes, we have to search his basement for the other
stuff. Not really too hard, because if we find the bodies, we have to call the cops. And
yeah, we don't
want to. That's a lot of paperwork.
He's in Britain, so we'd have to call the Bobbies.
The Bobbies?
The Bobbies.
Ah, the Bobby hit me on the head with our club. I gave him some quid, though.
Oh, okay.
And then he hit me some more.
Jolly good, then. Yes, we're butchering the British English. All right, just listen to your any show and have a few comments. I have to agree with you about Dragon Age. It's one of the three campaigns I'm running and fun to play. The Dragon Die is a great mechanic, and the rules are light, which is a big plus, as I'm getting to be a lazy GM in my old age, and I like not having to look up rules. Yeah, that is nice. And I suggest you get a hold of Hollow Earth Expeditions. It's another rules light system and very pulp. Think of it as Indiana Jones with Nazis, dinosaurs, pirates, Amazons, weird science gadgets, and a little magic.
That sounds freaking cool.
Although you can run the game from the core rulebook, the other two are valuable resources in terms of equipment and setting information. Their next release is going to be Revelations of Mars, which will presumably add the John Carter of Mars type setting material and perhaps some of the old Buck Rogers gadgets. No idea of the release on that, but I'll be buying it. Third campaign, of course, is Mutants and Masterminds, but you already know how much I like that system. I suspect DC Adventures will be on my shopping list in the not-too-distant future. As we've said, we're all pretty big fans of the Dragon Age RPG that has come out. So, I mean, I know I really enjoy it. Jeremy and I have both had chances to play it, and I went out and picked up a copy. So, very cool stuff. But that's it for our.
I definitely want to play Hollow Earth Expeditions. It looks cool.
Oh yeah. I believe it was nominated for an Innie.
Sweet, we just totally got the Balrog summoned, and we turned half the crowd into bards, and they're playing Thriller.
And with that, I think it is a good way for us to end this episode, this CantCon retrospective. We are, of course, so awesome. Recording this on Friday, July 30th, and I will be off to Gen Con next week, so we'll be getting some Gen Con stuff up, and probably the episode you're going to hear after this one is going to talk a bit about what happened at Gen Con, and some of my thoughts on that. So thank you all for listening.
Yes, thank you.
And you guys have a good night.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free, 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.